Our scripture reading this morning will be read from John 15, verses 1 through 8. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered and thrown in the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and prove to be my disciples.
Appreciate the reading that Ed has just done, and in just a moment we are going to look at this idea that's contained in John 15 and a number of other places in the book of John. So primarily in the lesson this morning, almost exclusively, if not, we will stay in the book of John. You might want to turn there and you'll be able to easily follow along with me. A couple of brief announcements I want to make before we get into the lesson. First of all, we have a number of visitors today, and we're glad you're here. I hope we make you feel welcome. I encourage those of you that are older members, long-time members is what I mean by that, reach out to some of these newer folks and let's make them feel welcome. I know a lot of you are doing that already and appreciate that very much. People are enjoying being here, and that's always a good thing. So let's reach out to the several that we have in our audience today. Also, Ed mentioned Six Flags and a number of other summer activities, but especially the Six Flags trip coming up this Saturday. Wes and I are going to have to nail down the details tomorrow, the logistics of transportation and all of that. Encourage everybody that wants to go to go. We would love to have everybody that wants to go to be with us. But please do see, and I'm going to put this on Wes, please seek him out. And let him know if you're going. Let him know, if those of you that are older, if you can drive or chaperone or whatever. And so we'll be able to put all of that together tomorrow and during the week before Saturday. If we have enough people going, we are going to purchase group tickets, incidentally. So he'll give you those details, and that's about all I'll say about that. Lastly, before we get into the lesson, I want everybody to notice, because several of you have asked, I have a Band-Aid on my nose, okay? And I want to dispel any doubt whatsoever. The truth is, I got out of line and Montel hit me. No, seriously, I've got an open wound there. I'm just trying to keep it clean. But nothing serious. So anyway, a lot of you have asked about it. It ain't nothing serious, so let it go with that. But let's turn to the book of John, and let's talk a little bit about what I'm calling the great I am. You know that the emphasis we have this quarter as we're looking at our theme is taken from John 14 and verse 9 as something Jesus said to the apostles. He who has seen me has, of course, seen the Father, has seen God, has seen the very essence of God, etc. Now, John teaches this in his gospel. I'll get more into that as we get into the lesson. But this morning we want to focus on the fact that Jesus is the great I am. If we have seen Jesus, if we have seen the picture of Jesus in the Gospels, if we understand who he is, I was thinking of this, one of the songs that Tom led, I wish I could think of which one really stuck out to me, but you may know. But anyway, we've seen that Jesus is indeed the Son of God. He is the great I am. Let's talk a little more about that. This may look somewhat familiar. I've adapted it from the lesson I did at the very beginning of the quarter, four Gospels, four images. Now, John's image, remember, was that Jesus is the Son of God. Also remember that I went through and noted John's Gospel begins with this unique prologue. This, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, by Him was the world, were the world's made, etc., etc. It's a direct declaration of Jesus' eternal deity. There was some concern and doubt about that in the first century. In fact, heated concern. That lasted, in fact, for several centuries. Was much debated. You can, if you're a student of history, go back and even read a number of those documents. They are interesting. They do make you think. They provoke thought about Jesus, who he is. But John, the book of John, the Bible is declaring him to be the eternal Son of God. That means he always existed before Bethlehem, but he took on him the form of humanity. Wes was preaching this yesterday. But took on him the form of humanity and became human. That does not mean that he ceased to be God. Now, I'm not going to get deep into that, but it continues even to this day to be a controversy. Remember that John's account proposes the importance of reason, logic. We are often, as Christians, we are said to be people who have a leap of faith. We believe things. Well, Mark Twain said it. I started quoting him. Let me just quote him. Mark Twain said, "Faith is believing what you know ain't so." Okay? I wholeheartedly disagree with that. In fact, I'm the kind of person, and I know a number of you are as well. If you had to come to Christianity and you were expected to believe things that, number one, didn't make any sense, number two, didn't have any evidence, and number three, just were downright illogical, you'd turn away from it. You would not believe it. But it does make sense. There is evidence to support what the Bible says. It is evidence itself, and there is extra-biblical evidence. And thirdly, it is very logical. And John's account is one of those books that proposes the importance of reason. We are supposed to reason. God commands us to do that. We are to apply logic to what we believe. We are pressed by logic, by reason, to draw the conclusion that Jesus is the eternal Son of God. And there are a number of things. Remember, I put this up. I've got a little bit changed here, but I put something like this up in John 20, verses 30 and 31. "These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Son of God." What is written? Well, John selects seven miracles. They are signs. They are miracles that directly point to him being the eternal Son of God. In fact, they point to him being the Creator, the one with all creative power. He is God. John 1, verse 1, etc., following again. "By him it was that God made the worlds." Nothing was made that was made without his power. And there is the resurrection itself, which becomes the greatest proof. "I have power to lay down my life," John 10, "and I have power to take it again." None of us have that kind of power. Only God has the power of life. Only God could choose the precise moment to relinquish his life. "Into thy hands, Father, I commend or commit my spirit." And only God has the power to come back, to take his life up again. Jesus had that power. And there are unique incidents. One I'll point out a little bit later in the lesson. But things that just show, man, this guy, there's no one that ever has been like him or ever will be again. He's different. And what is different about him is he is, in fact, deity. There are lengthy discourses, especially with the Jewish leaders in the book of John. One of those that stands out primarily is in chapter 7 and 8. And especially when you get to chapter 8, that argues the whole background, if you will, of Jesus. Where he came from. Is he the product of fornication? Mary and some unknown man. Perhaps Joseph, perhaps not. Is he, in fact, the eternal Son of God? Jesus debates them, argues with them. A lengthy discourse. And you are pressed again by logical conclusion to arrive at the decision, yes, he is the eternal Son of God. And there are notable questions throughout the book. In chapter 14, from which we've taken our theme verse for this quarter, "He who has seen me," that was answered from a question. And that question that was asked him, Thomas asked him, I believe it was, or Judas asked him rather, and said, "Where did you come from? Tell us who you are and where you came from." And Jesus answers that. And there are questions in the book, in chapter 14, and questions in the book that prompt you to reason as Jesus answers them, and the way he answers them, that I am the eternal Son of God. And so, each of these, all of these things and more we're about to look at, they contain numerous, just declarative statements, declarative, if you will, statements that attest to Jesus' eternal deity. Now, let's make one other point. Jesus is the eternal Son of God. When you look at the content of John, it emphasizes that theme. It's what the whole book is about. Chapter 1, the prologue begins with it. Chapter 20, you are told that was the purpose for writing what I've written. But so specifically in the book, you get the import of Jesus' numerous I am statements. And that's what we want to really focus on for the remainder of the lesson. I am. And analogies that he gives in and among those statements, a number of the analogies, you just can't miss it, what he's saying. Now, why do I say it like that? Well, I did some reading this week again, and you may have done this as well. There's a lot of debate about the book of John. And there's a lot of debate about these statements. For one, even among brethren, and I've actually heard a gospel preacher teach this, Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. I find that astounding. I mean, the very basis of our faith, we all, when we were baptized, we confessed a belief that he is the Son of God. Why do we believe that? Well, a person might say, well, the Bible teaches it. It does. But did Jesus ever claim it? I would say yes, explicitly. We're going to look at some of that. But there's a debate about it. If you go beyond members of the church or gospel preachers and you move on into the religious community, they will say things like, all of these statements we find, the I am statements in the book of John, they were just added. They were sort of collected from things people had been saying and just kind of codified, if you will, in the book of John. But they weren't things Jesus originally said. I find that astounding. But that's where the thought is. That's mainline, quote-unquote, Christianity. That's where their thinking is. But I think if you look at these statements and you understand that John is not saying, this is what some people are saying about him, we're going to see that John is quoting Jesus. This is what Jesus said about himself. So again, it comes down to a very simple point. You either believe in Jesus and you believe in his veracity, his trustworthiness, or you don't. But let's look at some of this. We start off by realizing there are direct declarations. You may want to turn back to Exodus 3:14. You may be very familiar with the statement. Remember, God is calling Moses, okay, to be the prophet, to go and to lead his people out of Egypt. Moses asked him a question. When he's told he has to confront Pharaoh, Moses said, well, who do I tell him you are? You know, what if he asks me, what name do I give him for you, God? And God answers him, and in the English, it says, God answers and says, I am that I am, or I am who I am, or a host of different ways of translating that. And I don't really go too far with that because I think the point is, I am the self-existent God. I am the only eternal being there is that exists. I am that I am. I have no beginning. I don't have an origin. I don't, like the Mormons believe, I don't have parents somewhere on yet another distant, far world or universe. I am that I am. Moses, when you go to Pharaoh, tell him, I am has sent you. Now again, is that grammatically correct? No. But is it correct and uniquely so for God? Yes. Because God is. How do we explain God? God just is. He does. It's not that God was or God began, etc., etc. God just is. And logically, and I'm not going to get sidetracked with this, but this is why I came to really believe in God. Logically, mathematically, if you will, it makes no sense that there is not an eternal being, at least an eternal force. God is. I am that I am. But notice John 8. Let's stay in the book of John. Look at chapter 8 and look down at verse 23. Is this not the exact same thing Jesus is saying here? He said to them, again, Jewish leaders here, we're discussing. he's discussing with. He said to them, "You are from beneath. I am from above. You are of this world." In other words, you have parents, etc. "I am not of this world." Each of us that's in here this morning has an origin, obviously, of God, our soul. But we also have a body that is of the earth. We are people of the earth. We have parents. We come from somewhere on the earth. Jesus comes from heaven. And what Jesus is declaring there, "I am from above." And I don't think if you look at this, and you look at the discussion that follows. Now, a person might say, he's not really claiming a parallel with Exodus 3 and all of that. I say he is. And I say the context bears that out. The Jews don't react by saying, "Okay, you're from above." No, they react, "You're a blasphemer. You can't, only God is from above." That's right. "And I am God," is what Jesus is saying. Now, let me go further with that. Notice John 8, verse 28. Drop down a few verses. We're in this context. Jesus said to them, "When you have lifted up the Son of Man," you may remember very recently Wes preached about this, the idea of being lifted up. He's talking about the crucifixion. "When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you shall know," and notice exactly as it reads, "you shall know that I am." I realize in italics, the word "he" is probably in your translation. It is not in the original. Jesus never, and you can go check me on this, and I would encourage you to do so. There is a way to emphasize, "I am he. I'm that guy." And you put a word in there that translates to "he." Jesus never in these statements includes that word. So what is he literally saying? Jesus is saying, "I am." Notice the point here in John 8, and we're going to follow Jesus in John 8. "When you have crucified me," is what he's saying, "then you will know that I am." Now, why do I put these other verses up here? I'm not going to turn to them, because I've done that recently. But if you were to go to Mark 15 and verse 39, you may remember that Jesus cried with a loud voice and yielded up his ghost or his spirit. And you may also remember that the centurion, the Roman centurion, had a reaction to that. He's quoted as saying, "Certainly this was a righteous man." But if you look at Luke 23, Luke records Jesus, quotes Jesus as saying, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." Then he yielded up his spirit to the Father. Now notice that. He chose the precise moment to die. Who does that? If you saw someone, you picture this for a moment. You won't. It cannot happen. But if you saw someone simply declare, "I will die now," and die, what would you think? Someone with the ability to give up his life at a precise moment in time, what would you think? Well, I'll tell you what the Roman centurion thought. If you look at Luke 23 and verse 47, "Certainly this was the Son of God. When you have lifted me up, you will know that I am." I'll tell you who else knew that in that crowd. Those people that were mocking him and taunting him about proving he was the Son of God, he did. He didn't come off the cross to prove it. But he did exactly what he said here. He proved it in their earshot by choosing the moment to die. "When you crucified me, you will know I am." Notice John 8, verse 58. As this discussion continues, here's how Jesus concludes it. They're talking about Abraham. We have Abraham to our father. Jesus said, "Abraham's not your father. If he was, you'd do what Abraham did. He had faith. He rejoiced to see my day." Remember the Genesis incident. He saw it. He was glad. Verse 56. The Jews said, "You ain't even 50 years old. How can you talk about Abraham seeing you or you seeing Abraham?" Jesus said unto them, verse 58, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." Now this is the exact same construction you see earlier in verse 28, but I love the fact that at least here they left the italic the italicized he out of it. Because there is no question he is claiming deity. I am. I am the I am that Moses talked to in Exodus 3. I am that I am. Tell them I am has sent thee. Before Abraham was, 2,000 years ago, I am. 8,000 years ago, I am. 1,000,000 years ago, if there were such a thing, Jesus was saying, I am. Eternally, I am. How did they react? They took up stones to stone him because he had just, in their minds, committed the supreme blasphemy of saying, I am God. There isn't any question Jesus is directly declaring himself to be deity. Notice John 10. Turn a page or so. This whole passage, I've been alluding to it all morning. The idea of I have power to lay down my life, verse 17. I have power to take it again. I have that power, verse 18. In this passage, where this concludes, and this is the Good Shepherd passage. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about this. I know Wes is planning to teach this passage, and I'll just leave that for him. But notice later in John 10, look down in verse 36. When Jesus is debating with them, we'll back up to verse 30. He's debating this point. I and my Father are one. I am, is the point. I and my Father are one. Now notice as they get into this discussion, verse 33, you know, you're committing blasphemy. That's why we want to stone you, because you're just a man and you make yourself to be God. Then Jesus quotes the Psalms and he says, listen, isn't it written in your law, I said you are gods? Now that's a hard passage, but they were very learned individuals. And here is a guy representing God, etc. But Jesus quotes that to give them a hard passage, to at least make them think, you know, every time you make a statement about being God, it doesn't mean it's blasphemy, especially if in some sense the statement is true. But let me go a step further, Jesus says. In verse 36, he says, say ye of him whom the Father has sanctified. Now notice this. And sent into the world. Who's he talking about? Himself. He had made enough statements by this time. They were talking about them. And here's one of them. Say ye of him whom the Father has sanctified and sent into the world, you blaspheme? Is that what you say? Because I said I am the Son of God. In other words, he quotes himself from the past, some recent time, but he quotes himself as having said, I am the Son of God. Now again, for someone to say Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God, well, here he quotes himself as having said it. And he says, when I said I am the Son of God, do you immediately conclude that's blasphemy? They would have said, we sure do. That's blasphemy. Jesus would have said, why? They would have said, because you are not God. You are not the Son of God. Jesus would have then come back, notice verse 37, if I don't do the works of my Father, don't believe me, but if I prove what I say, then believe it. Now, how many works, how many miracles, how many things had he done to this point to prove his statement? Obviously, many. Many. Several of which are already quoted and present. Most of John's seven miracles have already been performed and recorded by this time in John 10. Saving John 11, Lazarus is going to be raised from the dead. But he said, look at the works. Look at what I do. Look at the proof. That's what I'm saying. I am the Son of God and the works prove it. Logically, reasonably, if a man has the power of God and says something, anything, you must believe it. Jesus said, I have the power of God. You've seen it. And what I say is, I'm not just a prophet. I'm not just a man sent by God. I'm the sanctified, the particular one who is the Son of God. Notice John 13. We go a little further. John 13, look down at verse 19. Now, this is an interesting passage to me. And this is not the crowd at large, and it's not the Jewish leaders. It's his own disciples who doubted, who didn't really understand who he was, etc., etc. And Jesus, remember we were talking about this recently. Jesus is saying, one of you is going to betray me. In fact, he had bowed down earlier in John 13, washed their feet, and said, all of you are not clean. One of you is going to betray me. So they began to question, who is it? Who is it? Look down at John 13 and verse 19. When he said, I tell you before it come, that when it has come to pass, you may believe that I am. What is he talking about? Well, look at verse 18. He that eats bread with me has lifted up his heel against me. What was he saying to the disciples? What he was saying was this. And the other passages, the other accounts record him as saying this, and they want to know who it is. He that dips with me in the sop, remember all of that, pointing out that it's Judas. Judas gets up in the middle of dinner or middle of that, you know, institution and so forth there and leaves. And what you do, do quickly. But in John quotes him saying something the others do not. And what he says to the disciples is, remember that whoever betrays me, remember when it happens, and remember that I told you it was going to happen, and again, that I'm pointing out to you who it is that's going to betray me, so that when it happens, notice again verse 19, you can believe I am. Now, how does that prove that he is the Son of God? Well, look back earlier in John 13. Look in verse 2. Supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas to betray him. Now let me ask you a question. I don't know, you know, exactly who's here this morning. I know most everybody that's here. But none of us know what's in each other's heart. Suppose I have in my heart, Satan has put in my heart, to leave my wife tomorrow. Because she hit me on the nose. No, I'm kidding. But suppose Satan has put in my heart to leave my wife tomorrow. Do you know that? Of course not. And I can't look into your heart and know what sin you may already be contemplating committing. But you know who can? Jesus. And what Jesus is saying here is, I look around you 12, and I know. He's saying it to Judas. I know which one of you is about to go out and sell me out. I know you, Judas. And I know Satan is in your heart. Now he says to the other disciples, doesn't say it's Judas. He just says one of you. But he says, when it happens, just remember that I said I knew. I knew exactly who it was. I showed you. I dipped my bread in the sauce, we would say. Remember I said that and know I am. I can look into every one of your hearts and know exactly what is there. That's a direct declaration of saying, I'm God. I know what's in your heart. Look at John 18. And I love this. It has long been one of my favorite incidents in all the Bible. They came. Judas did go betray. And they came to take him. And let's just read this from verse 4. Verse 4. They came. And he said, whom seek ye? Verse 5. They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said unto them, notice, I am. And I think that's exactly how he said it. Not I am he. It's me. I am. And Judas that betrayed him stood with them. And as soon as he said, I am, they went backward and fell to the ground. Now, how many of them were there? I don't know. A crowd of them. A multitude, it says here. So there were a number of them, many of them. And they came out there to that garden. And the moment Jesus said, I am, they all fell down. And they all fell down backward. Now, I don't know if you've ever stumbled and fallen down backward, but it's a shock. I mean, you trip, you're backing up, and you trip over something, and you go straight back, and your eyes are wide open, and you're like, whoa, and you're falling down. In mass, they fell down. I love that. I always try to imagine how they got back up. Because, son, sword strapped to my side, spear in my hand, or anything else. A dude that can say, I am, and I fall down. I'm afraid of. And that's exactly the point. This is God. You're in the presence of God. You have come to arrest God. As soon as He said, I am, they fell backward to the ground. And then He asked them again, whom seek you? I imagine when they said Jesus of Nazareth the next time, they said it a lot differently than they said it the first time. You would have been scared. You would have not known what to say. You would have not known what was going on. But He's not rushing at you. He's not killing you. He's just asking you again, who are you looking for? Who seek you? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said, verse 8, I have told you. I am. And then, of course, He goes on to tell them, let these go their way, meaning His disciples, you've only come from me. And He, in a way, protects them even though they scatter and run. Remember the incident. I am. And He proved it. Now, there are a number of other statements. And I'm going to run through these. A couple of them we're going to have lessons on anyway, so I don't want to get ahead of it. Unless Wes has already had a lesson on one of them. But just remember some of the other statements that are in the book. These are analogous declarations. What does that mean? Well, they're metaphors. Metaphor is when you equate one thing with another to make a point about the first thing. This is the point. Jesus is expressing His deity by comparison. For example, I am the bread of life. I am the bread come down from heaven. I am the bread of life. Notice at the feeding of the 5,000 in John 6, what was He saying? Later in verse 63, when He taught them a very hard lesson, and they, remember, all turned away from Him and so forth, what He was saying was this, you've got to eat me. You've got to digest me into yourself. Now, not literally, but in a spiritual sense, you've got to take me into your heart. You've got to take me inside you, and my life has to become your life. I am the bread of life. What I think it means more than anything or as much as anything else, the main point, bread is the sustenance of life. It was to those people. It's the staple of life, if you will. It's that basic thing, and grain really is all over the world. I mean, you can check this. But grain of some sort is the very basic staple of life the world over. And Jesus is saying, that's me. As the Son of God, that must be the central part, the main thing, the basis of your life, I am the bread of life. Notice what else He says. Wes talked about, I am the light of the world. Remember how he pictured the idea of the light being upon the cross and so forth? Great lesson last Sunday. But notice, I am the light of the world. John, in John 1, if you want to flip back there and look at it, remember John starts the book with that. He was that light that lights everybody that comes into the world. If you want to be in the light, you have to come to Jesus. If you want to come out of the darkness where is evil and sin and Satan and so forth, you have to come to Jesus. I am the light of the world, and there is no other. You know, we have all kinds of sources of light in our day and time. In this modern, miraculous almost world, compared to everybody else that's ever lived, we have numerous sources of light. And so we may think of light coming from here or from there or whatever. Well, scientifically, it really doesn't. It comes from one source. And the point is, spiritually, so it does. It comes from one source. I am the light of the world. Notice what else Jesus says in John 10. I am the door of the sheep. We were looking at John 10, how it ended there with them again. You know, you're blaspheming. No, I am the door of the sheep. If a person is going to enter into the pasture of God, become one of the flock of God, he's going to have to come through me. And you know you've heard the analogy. Wes may talk more about this, but the idea that the shepherd would literally lay himself down across the entranceway. There would not be a gate, but there would be the shepherd. And anything coming in to get the sheep or any sheep coming out had to go through him. I am the door of the sheep. And again, I am the good shepherd. I am the beautiful shepherd. I'm the shepherd you want to follow. I'm the one you want to listen to. The sheep know me, and they hear me, and they follow me. I'm the good shepherd. And I am, he told Martha there. I am the resurrection and the life. If I choose for your brother Lazarus to live, he lives. If I choose for him to die, he dies. If I choose to raise, and I will in the last day, you are right, Martha. I will raise everyone in the last day. I'm going to talk some more about that in tonight's lesson. But I am the resurrection. You know, the Bible teaches us, the book of John teaches us, that it is Jesus' power, not just to call Lazarus from the grave as though that might have been some sleight of hand, some trick. No, the final proof, when it's too late, will be to everyone who's ever existed, well, Jesus will have the power to call everyone from the graves, from the sea, from Hades, and they will gather before him. I am the resurrection, and I am the life. I have the power to give not just physical life. I created physical life. I can give that. But I have the power to give spiritual life. And that's far more important. Finally, Jesus said in answer to that question, well, next to last, one more point after this. But Jesus said, I am the way. Remember Jeff's lesson in January and how he made the point that the Greek word there for the way is the same word for which we get Exodus. There in the book of Exodus, coming out, the way out of bondage, out of sin. It is a beautiful analogy. Great lesson that he had. But I am the way. If you want to come out of sin, if you want to come to God, because remember that's what he said. And I emphasized that last week. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father but by or through me. I am, Jesus is saying. And I'm the only one through which one gets salvation. And finally, the passage that Ed read for us. I am the true vine. I am the vine, and you are the branches. This is not talking about some wild denominationalism or all of that kind of picture. This is talking about a very simple picture. Vines growing next door. Probably a lot of you do as well. Grapevines, blackberry vines, raspberry vines, etc. You know how vines grow, and they grow in a mass of branches. But if you dig back through all the branches, you will find the main vine. And that's how it begins. When you plant, and I've planted plenty of them in my life, you plant it with one vine. And that's Jesus. And every person who extends from him, that is a branch tied to him. Every individual, every Christian becomes a branch of that vine. I am the vine, you are the branches. Are you here this morning? And you would be a branch from the very vine of God. Do you believe in Jesus? That he is the Son of God, as he said he was. Do you believe and will you confess that he's the Son of God? Will you this morning be willing to repent, to seek forgiveness, to want to do everything that's right, to strive to be obedient to God in every respect? That's repentance. And will you be baptized for forgiveness of your sins, to have them washed away, calling upon God for salvation because you're obeying him by being baptized? Maybe you're here this morning and you've done that and you know your life is not in harmony with what the Lord wants, but you want to come back to Him. You want to be right with Him. And you certainly can do that. If you need to come this morning, please come. Father's name.